I'm Larry again. Thank you. Well, I'd like to say I know Betty Ann Z, but I just met her tonight and I shook her hand and she was very nice. And she said, let's rock and roll. So that's why I just said, let's rock and roll. So without further ado, there's Betty Ann Z who's going to rock us.
Guys are nuts. Okay. Hi, I'm Betty Ann. And my home group is the Tradition 5 group in Woodland Hills, and also the Monday night Westlake Village parent meeting that we just started about almost 3 years ago. And it's great to be here, and it's really great to be here. It's great to, I was supposed to be here last month. And it was really, well, it's one of those full moons that last for like 6 months, you know. And or else it's like True Blood. I don't know. I swear to goodness, you know, this has not been my deal. But I really want to thank Ron for asking me back. I was telling Jack when Jack called me last month on Thursday night at 7 o'clock. Betty Ann, where are you? I'm right here. I'm in my house. Hi, Jack. What the hell are you calling for? And then I went, oh my God, I'm supposed to be at the Thursday night men's stag. And you know, it was really funny because I told Jack and I told Ron, I said, I've waited all these years to come out here and share with these guys. You know, it's been so cool to be able to do that. And then I blew it. And when I hung up the phone, I said, they'll never ask me back again. So I think they were desperate this month. And but anyway, I love alcoholics. I love Al-Anon, though. I love this group. I mean, I can remember when Jack came into Al-Anon. He was very sick. Nothing's changed. Now, it's really interesting because if you stay in the program long enough, you will know, you know, you can see other people come into the program. And most of the people here in this room, I've seen you come into the program, except for that old guy there. But, you know... Let me tell you something, you know, if it wasn't for Al-Anon and for the men that are in this room and the spouses and the kids and watching Willie's kid take a cake for his Alateen time. You know, my daughter's in the program 34 years and she counts her Alateen time, Kimberly. She's up in Reno. She's my oldest daughter. My girls were the ones that were most affected by my Al-Anonism. And now they call it bipolar, or ADD, or HDD, or, you know, drug. Thank God they didn't drug me then, you know, you'd have a different speaker tonight. And, but I love that little, you know, joke, you know, that they say, well, why don't Al-Anon serve on jury duty? Because they always insist they're the guilty ones, you know. And I could tell you a lot of those good jokes. But I don't have enough time since you took up all my time from the birthdays and readings and, you know, whatever. But I drove 70-something miles here one way. Thank you. And it's a privilege. It's a privilege to be able to drive here 70-something miles. It's a privilege thing tonight and thing to be in a room filled with men. Because one of the, you know, the tragic things about, you know, my story that I thought was very tragic and very dramatic and which I used for a long time, you know, was the fact is that my mother was killed when I was 6 years old and she was coming home from work and she was racing home from work. We lived in Chicago at O'Hare when it was an Air Force base across the street in a little trailer park. God forbid you call them trailers now, the modular home. And it was a trailer. And but my mother and my father came from a very, you know, my father was a hillbilly singer, came from northern Wisconsin. His parents came from Kentucky. They homesteaded way up north in Wisconsin. My father joined the CCs and then the service and then so that he could support his family. He's the one of 12 children. My mother was the oldest of 11 children. And they went to a one-room schoolhouse. And I'm giving you a little bit of that history of alcoholism. My father and all my aunts and uncles, everybody, you know, played, you know, guitars, musical instruments, and sang hillbilly music, went to the Grand Ole Opry when they could afford it, and which is under, you know, 14 feet of water. They just cleaned it out. But what was really interesting about that is that my mother loved an alcoholic. She loved my father. And being the oldest of all of her siblings, my mother was really the one that was really the outgoing one, the one that was really, you know, charged. She went and she got a job in Des Plaines after my father and her married. She got a job for Johnson & Johnson. And, you know, all those family secrets. I didn't find out a lot of this anything until after I was in Al-Anon, in fact. But anyway, my mother and father loved each other. But, you know, my father drank, and we lived in that little trailer park, and my father drank a lot. And he drank after work and after he's off the base. And my mother went and got a job at Johnson & Johnson. You were supposed to have a college degree at the time. My mother said, you know, if you'll just test me or let me, you know, apply, whatever, you know, she said, I can show you I could do this job. And, you know, she was a gung-ho Al-Anon, pre-Al-Anon, really. And she did. She got this job at Johnson & Johnson. She had this great job. But you know what? She watched my father's drinking, just like you watch your spouse's drinking, or your partner's drinking, or your kids now. I believe alcoholism is a generational illness. I believe that it's gone on for, you know, in my family for generations and generations. And we just have had in the last 3 years, two grandchildren and one son, my husband's son, die of alcoholism and addiction. And so, my mother, though, you know, they had me, but I could tell my father's drinking. I could see my father's drinking, and I was one of those kids, they call them, you know, latchkey kids, you know. They just left me home. And, you know, today it would be latchkey kid. But anyway, I was in this little trailer, and I used to always make, you know, a little bit of dinner every night and wait for my parents to get home from work. And my uncle lived down in the other trailer, my cousins and my aunts. And my uncle was an alcoholic. He died at 47 years old, and he weighed 92 pounds and extended liver and jaundice. But, you know, nobody ever talked about the drinking. Nobody ever talked about that. But my mother, this one night, she was pregnant with twin boys, and that's one of the greatest gifts of coming here tonight and to being with the men in this program and having men in my life in the program, is that my mother was carrying twin boys, and they didn't know that at the time. They didn't have any of the sonograms and all that. But anyway, my mother, they had a party for her. She worked up until she was 9 months pregnant, and they had a party for her, and she was very nervous. I found out later that through my fourth step and through my fifth step, I was able to find out some history about my mother's death, because everything was a secret then. Everything was a secret. And but anyway, so she finally, there was this lady that my mother particularly didn't like, but my mother was like us, you know. She'd help out anyone. I found that out later too. And so what I received from my mother, even through her death, as I receive, thank God for the sixth step, I receive some character assets, you know, and which I hope offset my character defects. And but my mother that night, you know, took this lady to drop her off the train so she could take the train into Chicago. And I found out she didn't particularly like this woman, but she was rushing home from work. And this is my perception, and it talks a lot about that in Al-Anon and also in Alcoholics Anonymous and Alateen. It talks about the perception that we have of alcoholism and how it affects our lives. But my perception was is that she was coming home from work to make my father dinner, because that was usually the, you know, the gist of it all was when my father would come home, and if dinner wasn't on time, or if he was late, or if he was at the corner bar, that would start the vicious cycle of, you know, my father going out and drinking, and then my poor mother being humiliated by having me go to the bar and try to drag him back into the trailer. But this one night, you think she didn't come home. And that one night, and this is the basis of the root of my oral history in regards to alcoholism, that night she didn't come home when she dropped that lady off at the train station to rush home to make this dinner. She crossed the railroad tracks and another train hit her. And it hit her going like 50 miles an hour or something like that. Her little 49 Ford was pushed into a telephone pole. She was ejected and through, you know, the front window, 9 months pregnant. And she landed in a field 200 feet away. And she was killed instantly. That's the night that changed my life. And it changed my life for a number of years until I got into Al-Anon. And until I did the steps and I had a trusting sponsor, that I was able to let go of that. To let go of that resentment, that anger, how it affected me, and stop being the victim, you know, and they say be the volunteer. I didn't volunteer for that when I was a kid. So that's the gift of the fourth step. That's the gift of the steps they give us. You know, when I was a kid, I had no choice with that. But as an adult, and in Al-Anon, I do have a choice today. But anyway, it was very dramatic, as usual. My father, a year later, remarried, moved out to California, and my stepmother had, you know, I have five half-sisters and brothers. And we lived in Sacramento, and I was taken completely away from my birth family, my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, the music, and all this. And I'll tell you, I was 12 years old when I was a freshman in high school in Sacramento. And it was horrendous for me because I was just absolutely, you know, insane, really, practically. My father was overseas a lot. He was in Vietnam twice, and I was babysitting, working, doing all these things. And there's where the martyrdom came in. I loved it when I came into Al-Anon, and one of the old-timers in Reno said to me, she goes, well, we play the three M's, mother, manager, martyr. And somebody stole that from me, and they put it in Pathways to Recovery. Now they call it the four M's, manipulator. And, you know, mother, manager, martyr. But anyway, that's okay. I told him about it. But but I went through high school, and I acted out a little bit in high school. I kind of put one of the girls' heads in the locker. She said something bad about my mother. And, you know, I was a very angry kid. So you can see it as parents here or as grandparents here or, you know, with your kids. I acted out, you know, because of alcoholism. And it was a very fearful situation for me. But when somebody, a teacher, I don't know how many teachers are in here, but I always like to say that in my chair, is that I love teachers and I love counselors. And now they have, you know, psychologists. But I sponsor a psychologist that works for LSUD and she's getting laid off. So told her we got to find somebody else to shrink. What was really interesting about that is that after I did this incident, this bipolar incident, I guess, but I felt good. And they sent me to Mrs. Goff's office. And she's the one that said to me, you know, if any of you work in the healing professions or work with kids or whatever, you recognize that because you're an Al-Anon. You recognize the pain that's going on within children. And she said to me, she goes, you know, Betty Ann, this is really acting out. So I said, please don't call my parents, because I knew what my father would do. And she said, no, I'm not going to call your parents. But she said, I know something that I'm going to do. There's something going on in your home. And, you know, I denied it. And she said, you know, years later, I wrote her a letter of a, really not basically amends, but a, you know, a faith. I wrote her a letter and told her, I said, you changed my life that day. Because she said, I have a good, you know, good class for that I want you to take for the remainder of your school years here at El Camino. I said, well, what's that? She goes, drama. And she did. She put me in drama. And I acted out ever since then until I got into Al-Anon. And then I act out in your skits. But, no. You know, it changed my life. And I came to realize, and then through, you know, that experience through high school, I was the geek and I was the, you know, the kid that, you know, was poor and worked three jobs and, you know, I was the martyr and did all that. And, you know, I watched what alcoholism did to my stepmother and to my siblings. And today I was just telling Kathy, I said, you know, 2 months ago my stepmother died. She died in assisted living with dementia. But with the last 3 years of her life, and then she was very, very angry. All of a sudden, it switched in her head against my father, and she became a raging, just raged at him. And just, I mean, it was horrendous. It was horrendous how she treated him, and which he probably rightfully deserved, and which he took. But anyway, she died a couple months ago, and it was really interesting because my brother died last September. My stepbrother died at 54 years old and died from alcoholism in his sleep. And, you know, there was a lot of death surrounding our lives in the last 5 years, you know. And thank God for the program. Thank God the program gives us the ability through the steps and thing and through the traditions. And the traditions what really worked for our family, really worked for our family, and is that I could be the attraction to my family. I could be there, you know, in spirit, or I could be there, you know, physically, you know, for my stepsisters and my father, but I don't have to be involved with them. You know, I don't have to react and be involved with my family, which I always looked for validation from my father and from my family. Because I'm the only one that ever left Sacramento. I'm the only one that got into the entertainment business, which they think I'm, you know, I was the first person to ever get a divorce in my family. And so, of course, they thought I was really crazy. So I understand step two. But what happened with that is that I married young. I married a guy from Reno, and what I met, and his drinking bothered me. We moved to Seattle. I mean, we were in Reno, and I bought some property in Reno, and my aunts, you know, shared a little bit about my mother and all this. But, you know, I was really taken away from all my, you know, my parents and grandparents and my cousins and all that. So my husband had an offer up in Seattle, and we went to Seattle, and I lived in Seattle for 5 years during the 60s, and that marriage fell apart, and I had three little girls when that marriage fell apart. And it fell apart, and I'm so grateful for the, you know, ninth step. I'm so grateful for the eighth step, really, that I could make a list. I can remember putting my ex-husband, and when I divorced him, when we finally got a divorce after, you know, a number of years of fighting, and you know, financially going bankrupt through it. When we finally got a divorce, and what's so interesting about that is that I had to make amends to my ex-wife-in-law. That's what Bob calls him, calls her, my ex-wife-in-law. But he got married immediately a week after the divorce. That was very interesting. But anyway, you know, and I had those three little girls, and I had a thriving business, entertainment business in Seattle, and I was doing a lot of, you know, good things. I had a big offer for Channel 7 up there to do like a Barbara Walters type of show and all this, and I'd always been interested in entertainment, and I, you know, I have a big mouth, and so, you know, that was good. And I had a lot of courage then. See, I love the serenity prayer. I love the courage to change the things we can. I love the, you know, of the wisdom to know the difference. I really had no wisdom. I was, you know, independent, and Al-Anon coming in here makes us interdependent, you know, especially nowadays. It's really interesting to have, you know, new people ask you to sponsor them, but they want you to sponsor them like they want to be sponsored, you know. And some of the girls I sponsor, I'm not pyramid sponsorship. I'm not into that. Okay. But anyway, that's an inside World Service joke. But anyway, so, but what was really interesting about that is that I was humiliated, you know, because a couple years later, I took my girls back to live with my ex-husband. And because I was working three jobs, and again, and I was working in the bar business. That's where I met Bob. You know, there's always a Bob. And we went Bob bobbing along. And my first husband's name was Bob. Didn't have to change beds, or I mean names. But anyway. But the gist of the story is my husband is an alcoholic. And he's that real kind of alcoholic that I forced to make a free decision. And we did 13 months together. I was I was divorced for 5 years, and I had these three little girls. They were living up with my ex-husband. And I was doing all the things that usually the husband does during that period of time in the 70s, which is very rare. You know, I sent money up. I sent clothes up because I was humiliated. I was humiliated that I wasn't doing my part. And I was humiliated that I had to let my girls go back and live with them. Because I remember dropping them off with my clown partner, and I'll never forget it, with Carol. I dropped them back off in Seattle. I went up from Reno up to Seattle, and I remember leaving my girls there. And I signed something that, you know, I didn't even read. I was so, you know, insane and crying and carrying on. But I remember one thing, and this happened to me just a couple weeks ago, with my youngest daughter from that marriage, Ambie, and she's 41 now, but I saw that, how it comes back again and how the steps revitalize us. You talked about renewal tonight. Kathy talked about, you know, renewing your program. And that's what Al-Anon is giving me. It's giving me a sense of renewal you know, for my life, that I can change it one day at a time. I could change it tonight even. You know, I have to drive all the way back, though. But anyway, and Jack's leaving town, so I can't go to his house, thank God. But, no, just teasing. And, but, you know, what happened for me is that when I left that house that night, and I'm sure that all of you that have been through crisis or that you've given up your kids or you've given up your, you know, even the men here, that you see your wife take the kids or whatever, you know, whatever the, what you're going through, whatever conflict you're going through, and that's what our literature tells us, because our literature is written by us. Nobody else, no outside entities, no stuff. It's written by us. Our experience, strength, and hope. Thank God it's written by us. And thank God it's reasonable. Can you imagine literature, how much this would cost if we were sitting down the street in that shrink's office? I mean, it would be a fortune. I see that in the parent meeting. I see what they pay in the parent meeting. That's another story. I'll tell you about that. But anyway, but what happened to me is when I left there, I left and I lost all that self-worth. I lost all that self-esteem. I lost, you know, everything that Al-Anon. And I really lost my life. I really lost my life to a destructive life. And it's so interesting. I just was watching those Twilight movies. You know, I have no reason why I'm watching this Twilight movie, but that's what she did. She was so in love with this vampire that she wanted to destroy her life if she couldn't be with him. So she did reckless things. I went, that kid's an Al-Anon. You know, that's exactly what we do. We destroy our lives. We destroy our sense of well-being, you know, and all those things can be replaced. And that's what my late sponsor Shirley told me. God bless her soul. She said to me, she said, everyone that's been taken away from you will be replaced. That's why tonight is very special for me to be at this very enthusiastic meeting, because the men in this room love me. They're my brothers. They're not chasing me around anymore. you know, but I have a sense that you're out for my well-being. You're out for me to be well and to be in recovery. It doesn't make any difference that I have 35 years, you have 3 months, or, you know, 25 years tonight. It doesn't matter. You're here because you want to share it with me. You want to help me. And there's many nights in the last, and Jack can attest to this over the years because he knows my daughters and he knows my situation. People in this room know what's going on with Betty Ann. They know what's going on with our family. I just had an email today from a very famous circuit speaker whose daughter died of alcoholism today. And the other daughter was murdered 3 months ago. And she was an alcoholic, but she was sober. The other one, I have never, ever heard him in 30-something years ever speak about his family or speak about alcoholism in his family. And this is a very loved person. The humiliation of that, in that situation, when I got back to Reno, and I was working in this little, you know, really hot bar. Bob always says I was, you know, in fact, we were speaking Monday morning at the family meeting at South Bay Roundup, and Bob says he used to go to this hot bar where they had hot girls and hot pants. I'm like, thanks a lot. Make me like a hoe or something. But I was. But anyway, that's a fifth step for you. But I was skinny, though, and had dark hair. I was kind of cool. But anyway, asked my granddaughter, oh, Grandma, what happened to you? Al-Anon. Yeah, but no complacency here, let me tell you. But, you know, it was one of those nights, you know, it was one of those things, you know, that I can remember after I was doing some performances. I was with my partner, and she was drunk, and we were talking, and it was on a weekend night, and I had that feeling, and that most of us have here, you know, and it says in our literature, I had this feeling that I'm unwanted, unloved, and alone. You know, I was in this bar, and we were all drinking, partying, dancing, and now I understand what goes on with my daughter, Amy. I understand the disease of alcoholism and addiction that goes on with her because of my own experience of that hollow feeling that you can't get filled up, that hollow hole, you know, that can only be filled by being here with people like us, not like you. Us. That's a we program. It's us program that emotionally stabilizes us. But anyway, so I've been dating a lot. I had a billionaire boyfriend from Seattle, which Bob just reminded me of, just hit another billion. And as I was looking at him, thinking, But anyway, you know, I was serving him, you know, at the bar. He came in with a blonde with big boobs and another lower companion. And and of course, I went over there in my little hot pants, and Billy Joel was playing, you know, on the piano. I mean, all these, you know, fun things were happening. And, you know, he ordered two drinks. He ordered two drinks, you know, not a one person. But he wore a Brooks Brothers suit. He had a big cigar, you know, had a roll of money. And then when I came back to collect, of course, you know, she paid out of his money and she stiffed me. And so I did something to her drink. But anyway, I had to make amends to her. And but anyway, so the next round, you know, I took his money then because she was, you know, three sheets to the wind. And I found out from the bartender that he owned this really brand new, you know, five-star restaurant in Reno and in a bar, of course. And he opened up with his partner, who was an Armenian, that they grew up together in Sacramento. And so they had this really nice bar and restaurant and all this kind of stuff. And so I thought, that's cool. That's great. And I can remember going home that night, my roommate, I got home about 3 o'clock in the morning, and she goes, oh, geez, why are you so late tonight? And I said, you know what? I met the guy of my life. This guy's got a lot of money, wore a Brooks Brothers suit. You know, he's got a nice car. She said, did you see it? I said, no, but I said, I'm sure he does. And she goes, what's his name? I said, I don't know. And that's how it started, you know. And the next night he came in, and then we start talking. He was from Sacramento, and I grew up in Sacramento, like I said, through high school. And anyway, so it just started. It started on that merry-go-round called denial. My husband, if you ever hear his story, you know, Bob always talks about, he's married, you know, I'm his fifth wife, but he marries wives like twice. And so I think I'm legally his fifth wife. And he got married very young and in Sacramento, and married a girl that ended up just recently in the last, about 2 years ago, she just died of a wet brain. And he married her twice, and he married another lady twice. And, you know, said he had these three kids. And, you know, it was craziness. And he had ex-mother-in-laws and ex, you know, kids. And, I mean, you know, it was crazy. I went to work for him. That was crazy. And we went through, you know, we got rid of the second wife the second time. And then, you know, we got married. I almost put her head in a toilet at a bar, but I, you know, that's like high school. But anyway, you know, there it is, the insanity of the illness. It's the insanity of us loving an alcoholic, you know, going to any lengths, you know. But anyway, I went to work for him, but I started doing all those pre-Al-Anon stuff. I didn't like that all the waiters were, you know, were drinking with him, and he was drinking, and, you know, his family would come in, his kids would come in drinking, and then his brother's kids would come in drinking, and everybody was drinking at our bar, and they weren't paying. And, you know, and then I started doing the books, and then that got really crazy. But, you know, I just went insane. I went in through every step that we have and every tradition we have or every concept. I blew it, you know. And there was something in me, again, that I was humiliating myself to be putting in this kind of a situation. That's why when it takes, Frances talks about that from El Segundo, she always talks about how much courage it takes for us to walk through the doors, to admit that we're powerless and that our lives are unmanageable. And those first 3 months were fun, and, you know, we were drinking, and I was going out. I worked for Harris, you know, in entertainment, so you know, I knew everybody in Harris and all the clubs, and it was a very, you know, Reno was a very small town then. Everybody was owners. And that's when the alcoholism just absolutely rose its ugly head. And I became obsessed. And I was speaking in New Orleans one time, and a lady of color said to me, we were on a panel about obsession with the alcoholic. And after she heard my story, she goes, honey, you want to obsess, you're possessed. And I was just absolutely possessed. You know, trying to, you know, put myself in a position of constantly being humiliated. I remember this one night, little Kim Larkin always talks about drive-bys. Well, I'd go looking for Bob. After I closed up the restaurant, make sure that everything was okay, and get rid of my mother-in-law, who I really loved in a very special way, you know, I'd go downtown. I'd go looking for him. And I knew that he was in Harrah's Blackout Bar. So I would go, you know, Harrah's Blackout Bar at that time was down in the basement. And it was black. You know, it was called the Blackout Bar. How great. Black as that kid's hat, you know. So I can remember going down there, and I had these high heels on, and I was, you know, skinny then, thank God. And I going down in the bar, and I'm sniffing him out, Old Spice or this or Minute or whatever, you know. And smoking, everybody smoked then and all this kind of stuff. And I can remember grabbing Bob and just dragging him out of the bar. And, you know, it wasn't Bob. And but I'm a great Al-Anon. I said, what the hell are you doing? You're not Bob. And he goes, Jesus, what the hell are you doing? You know, you're not my wife. I said, oh, you shouldn't be here, you know. And that, you know, he could have been another one of my fifth steps, you know, I'll tell you. But, you know, and then one night, you know, I'd dress up in my Fredericks to Hollywood outfit. Now, the guys will like this story, you know. And that Fredericks to Hollywood outfit was, you know, it had the thin string here. Nowadays, they have all that stuff. But anyway, they didn't have them at that time. Because I thought, our literature says it, if I'm just clever enough, just cute enough, you know, sexy enough to solve the problem for the one I love. So I ordered this Fredericks to Hollywood outfit, and it had tassels here, and it had a G-string, has a G-string here, and then you have those, they said I'm in Nordstrom's now, my girls are telling me, but they have those high heel slippers with the pom-poms on them, you know? Then it has, well, you know that outfit. Willie, it's your wife. And then it had a long, you know, that black crepe paper robe, you know, that has feathers all over it, and I smoked at the time with a French cigarette holder. You know, because you have to wait up for the alcoholic to come home, you know. And I would call Whittlesey Cab. I know you got him. And I could hear the dispatcher saying, no, Betty Ann, you know, Whittlesey Cab came to our restaurant. No, Betty Ann, I don't have him right now. Where is he? And I could hear him, you know, I could hear myself being humiliated again. Because in the background, the cab drivers would say, oh, is that bitch again, you know? She'll never find him tonight, you know? And then some nights they'd tell me where he was. But this one night I put my Fredericks to Hollywood outfit on, and I was going to wait up with him, and I had false eyelashes and hair up to here and all that, and I was entertaining myself during the night waiting for Bob to come home in Whittlesey Cab, and I was burning the feathers. They weren't real feathers, you know, so don't get worried, you PETA people. But that cat ran away. Anyway, didn't like alcoholism. Smart, detached, fast. And you know, and I can remember Whittlesey Cab coming up into that front lawn. And, you know, you get that adrenaline rush, you know. And I can remember, you know, running out to the front door, and they knock on the door, and I'd say, yes, leave him there on the porch, you know. Thank God we had a porch, and we had a big picture window like this, and across the street was Harold Smith's wife, who was a drunk, and they had a security guard there 24/7. She was a terrible drunk, and she died drunk. She weighed 500 pounds when she died. But anyway, so the security guard, you know, saw everything going on at my house. And I can remember that night, you know, going out on the front porch when the Whittlesey Cab left, and I'd raked up the leaves that day, and I had all the leaves on the lawn, you know, doing all of Bob's chores. And Bob never picked up a leaf in his life, you know. Maybe some broad or something, but anyway. You know, I can remember just that adrenaline rush, throwing him off onto the lawn. It was October, and it's cold in Reno at that time. And he was so drunk and passed out, you know, blackout or whatever. And I covered him up with those leaves. I put the cigar in his mouth, and this is the 70s, right? Burn, baby, burn. And then I went in the house, and I felt exhilarated, you know, and Bob's dead. So I went in to look for, I hoped he died, and I went in to look for the insurance papers and all that, and I saw that he borrowed on him, and he didn't make the payments. So I had a moment of compassion that Al-Anon tells you, and I went out and took the cigar out. And a couple of minutes later, the guy across the street that lives in that little car came over and knocked on the door, and I thought it was Bob. I thought he was up. And so I remember going to the door, my Fritz of Hollywood outfit on, with my hands on my hips, you know. And I looked at him and I went, "Who are you?" And he goes, "I'm the guy across the street and the security guard." And he said, "There's somebody on your lawn, you know, and he might die out there." I said, "That's none of your goddamn business, you know. Who the hell are you?" You know, and that's my attitude. You know, no attitude of gratitude, let me tell you. You know, "Get the hell off my property. Go over there." And this guy went off. And years later, you know, he was on the list. And that's where the steps come in again. Throughout your stories, the steps come back in again. Because I had to call that guy. We're up in Reno, and Shirley said to me, "You know what? The guy, the security guard," because I took him to my old house. You know, I lived in the right neighborhood. And she goes, "That's the security guard thing that you chased away and that used to watch this all the time." I said, I know. She goes, "You have to make amends to him. Don't come into the marathon meeting to make amends to him." And, you know, in my mind, you know, it's like that little thing in your mind is like, "This bitch, I can't believe this sponsor." You know, she remembers all that stuff. They remember everything. And so I did. I called him up. I called the security company, and I said, "This Johnson Security." I said, "I know that, you know, during the 76, whatever it was, you know, 74. I said, "You know, there was a guy there that worked for you. I'm sure he doesn't work there anymore, and his name is John. John Shillings, because I saw it on his badge." And every night I'd go by and flip him off, you know. But he goes, "Yeah, John's here right now." I went, okay. And he said, "Hold on just a minute." So John came to the phone. I said, "Hi, John, it's Betty Ann Zetz. I used to live on Patrick Avenue, and I said, I'm just calling you to make amends to you and Ming, because I'm in a program now of recovery, you know, for families of alcoholics." And he went, "Ha, ha, ha," started laughing, you know. And he goes, "Betty Ann Zetz, 1230 Patrick Avenue. He said, "You don't even have to make amends to me. I used to beg for the graveyard shift." He said, "That was the best shift in the world." "Nothing ever happened in that neighborhood except at your house." The steps work, let me tell you. Amends work. We became great friends after that. Just like Whittles the Cab. Same thing with Whittles the Cab, you know. I remember, again, my sponsor said, "You called Whittles the Cab." I used to keep track of it on my calendar. You know, 14 times a night, you know, I'd call Whittles the Cab. And it doesn't make any difference if it humiliates you, does it? You know, you still do it. It's that obsession. You know, the obsession that we have with the alcoholic of trying to control somebody else's life and drinking. And I can remember, you know, she said, "You can't go into the meeting until you call Whittles the Cab. You got to make amends to Whittles the Cab. You disrupted their business. You disrupted their service. They used to come to your restaurant. You had an account with them." I said, "Bob did." And she said, "You got to make amends to Whittles the Cab." And so I waited. She went into the meeting. I said, "No way will I make amends to Whittles the Cab." And so I lounged out there for a while, and then I'd see people going by, "What are you doing out here, Betty Ann? How come you're not in the meeting?" "Oh, just looking at Willis and Cab's phones, you know, whatever." And then when they'd disappear, that feeling, you know, again. And I went to the phone, and I picked it up. I took that, you know, that risk. I took it. And I believed in my sponsor. I believed in the steps. I believed that no matter what happened, that it was going to be okay. And Willis and Cab. I said, "Hi, it's Betty Ann Zetz, and I just wanted to give you a call." He goes, "Betty Ann Zetz." I said, "You probably don't remember me." He goes, "Oh, yes, we do." I said, "Well, I'm really sorry." I told him about Al-Anon. "I'm really sorry I, you know, disrupted your business, disrupted." He goes, "Betty Ann, I used to make a lot of money off of you. You know, because wherever you'd find Bob, I would make bets on it. She'll find him tonight. I know, you know, because he'd tell me he's at the Continental Lodge or he's at the Bamboo Room or this." And he goes, "I made a lot of money off you." And he goes, "Another thing, I want to tell you something, Betty Ann." He said, "Your husband came in here about 4 weeks ago. And he said he came in here and helped out a guy, apparently, that went to AA. And he lost his license. And your husband came in here and paid $50 so that he could get his license back, and he's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, well, you know what? You just ruined my amends. That damn Bob. But, you know, I don't have time to tell you. I've only got about 7 more minutes to clean it up and really tell you about my life, you know, since, you know, I forced her to make that free decision. And, but you guys have some enthusiastic, you know, members here that, you know, that keep us going. I could talk to 9 o'clock, but Ron's daughter doesn't want me to. But anyway, you know, it was one more of those nights of the humiliation. So one more of those nights, and then when my kids were there visiting with me, that Bob, you know, was drinking. So one more of those nights, and then when they went back to live with their dad and were begging me, Mom, Mom, you know, we want to come home. And it was one of those nights, and then that I was going, you know, left the restaurant and left Ambie in the car, in the house, and I got picked up. I got picked up for going through a red light at 4 o'clock in the morning while Bob was down at the restaurant with all the narcs. It was one of those nights that I don't want to ever forget. You know, where I was picked up, I was thrown into a drunk tank. It was a padded cell, really, for me. And I wasn't drunk. I was insane. That's why I love step 2. I love step 3 also, that I could turn my will and my life over before I make that choice to eat that cake. And but that night, you know, they give you one phone call. And that was another night that changed my life. And we know it here as a shift of consciousness. We know it as a bottom for us as Al-Anons. And that night, and then I called the restaurant, and finally they answered, and finally the waiter came, and finally got Bob, and he finally got there. And they were filming then in Reno, the police station was. And so I was grateful for that, because if they weren't filming, I would have never gotten out of that probably. But anyway, Bob came to the phone, and I said, Bob, you have to help me. And he goes, why? I said, because the bail's bondsman, Mac, is down at the restaurant drinking with you, and I need to be bailed out. And he goes, you know what, Betty Ann? You always figure everything else out. Figure this out. You know, and that was my key. That's when I went insane, you know, in that padded cell. And nobody would come help me. And over 35 years, you've been there. You've helped me. You've bailed me out. You've done things for our family and for us that my own family wouldn't do. They've done nothing for me, but you've done everything for me. It happened to me probably about 10 years ago. I just tell you this briefly. The first year we had our son, JR, when my husband went into Alcoholics Anonymous. And the second year, we had twin girls. And 3 months later, my twin died of crib death. And Amy's now 33 years old, and she's the alcoholic in the attic in my life, which she started when she was 16. And, you know, because of Alateen, thank God for Alateen, because people think, oh, I don't want my kid to go to Alateen. They'll end up being addicts and alcoholics. Well, you know what? Alateen's a gift to our kids. My grandson, who's 12 and a half, goes to Alateen. Doesn't go on a regular basis thing, you know, because he goes to a spiritual school and he has a spiritual life. But he does things to help others, because I had to take that little boy away from her, you know, when he was 9 months old, and then again at 4 years old. I had to have the courage, my sponsor Sally told me anything, to change the things I can. You know, I had to have the courage to fight my older girls and thing to be able to keep this boy. And then I watched his father, and then, you know, after 8.5 years of sobriety, died of an overdose 6.5 years ago. I watched my grandson on Tuesday. I watched him on Tuesday in PE. He's aggressive. He's a great kid. He gets straight A's. He goes to a middle school in the Valley, which is a spiritual school, Catholic school. And he's a sports kid. He's just a wonderful, wonderful boy. Loved and respected. That's what his teachers say. You know, because we have loved and respected him because of the program, of what you told us to do with him. And my daughter is still out there. She's still out there, and she's been in and out of AA many, many times. She's been, one of the things that did happen to her, though, is that when she first went to jail, you know, she called us, and she called us collect. And, you know, and I was able to say to her as a parent, I love you so much, Amy, but I trust you're going to figure this out. You need to call somebody in AA, not me. I can't help you. But when I called you, I said, can you help me? We'll be right there. And 3 months when that little twin died, first person I called was an Al-Anon. And I was not in really good shape because I had an emergency cesarean with these twins. I said, can you please help me? And you were there. You know, a couple weeks later after the baby's death, I was in the meeting in Reno, a Wednesday night meeting. I had JR, who was only 14 months old, 15, 16 months old at the time. I had Amy in my arms, and he was, you know, the older ladies took him out of the meeting. Thank God for babysitting here. Thank God the men in this room, they support babysitting. Thank God for that. We didn't have babysitting then. We just had the older members pick up your kid and take it outside so that you could have a meeting. That's the first time I started crying. I couldn't stop crying. And I had the baby in my arms, you know. And they said, it took me 2 years to be able to really tell the truth of what was going on with Betty Ann. I said, I am so fearful. I am so fearful that one of these nights that this other baby, you know, Amy will die and that she'll go in her sleep or whatever, like her sister did from SIDS. And they said, there's no fear. There's no fear, Betty Ann. We'll be there for you. And that night I went home, and about 10, 11 o'clock at night, all of a sudden I hear a knock on the door, and there's three of the Al-Anon members in their jammies, in their bunny jammies, in their bunny slippers, and they've got stuffed animals and their blankies, and they said, we're going to come in and we're going to spend the night until you can get through this fear. And that's how I did the fourth step in fear, is that you walked me through that fear. And that's how I was able to do a fifth step. That's how I was able to look at my character defects and look at my shortcomings. Because, you know, 10 years ago, the first time that Amy went to jail in downtown L.A., and we get that phone call, and she's in jail, and I had to go look at her, you know, go up there and be humiliated to go through that. There was no humiliation. It was like Yvonne Horrigan talks about, it's like doing a 12-step call to the people that are in the waiting room. Because you 12-stepped me. And I can remember going up there and going up the elevator, and they come out of the cell block, and she's in her orange, and she looks horrendous. And she's humiliated, and she's embarrassed, just as I was when I came in here. And I know why it says compassion. We give welcome and comfort. That's our group on Friday night to the families of alcoholics. She put her hand up on that glass, and I was able to put my hand up on that glass, and I was able to tell my daughter how much I love her. I don't understand this, but I'll tell you one thing I do understand. I understand the strength, the power, and the love that's in this room that continues in rooms throughout the world in 230 countries. I understand the love that I receive here. I understand the love and the compassion that my daughter receives here. Even when she went to prison, you know, you would go visit her in prison. My daughter is lost today to the disease of alcoholism and addiction. She is separated from her siblings because she went through everybody. There's nobody to go through anymore. I am not separated from you. I never want to separate myself from the sunlight of the spirit. I never want to be put in a position in Al-Anon or in Alcoholics Anonymous or in Alateen, Bob and I, that we are not willing to let you know who we are and where we're at this time and day. I'm going to close with this. Do you want me to close? My husband's late sponsor, Keith Carpenter, and my sponsor, Sally, who is very ill with Parkinson's and lives up in Bellingham, Washington, and who I still call once a week, and I have Patty Hill as my sponsor out in the desert. Keith gave us a card, and a saying, and I put it on my Al-Anon card. And, you know, I had to use this card a couple months ago because my son, JR, the one that went through Alateen and got married about 6-7 years ago, married a girl he met in Jackson Hole, and has two little grandkids, and his wife's an alcoholic, and he just left her a couple months ago. And I'm so grateful for the fact that my son had the courage to change the things he could because of his children. Because I know that Amy, in her heart, wants to change for her children. But love is not enough. As Bill Borcher wrote in that movie, love is not enough. But I know the love affair that Lois Wilson had with Bill Wilson. And I know the love affair that she had in the thing with Al-Anon and Ann Bingham and Ann Smith and all of them. What a gift of our great-great-grandparents. What a gift we have today. 2 months ago, I became a great-grandparent for my biracial granddaughter. She had a baby shower. Over 100 Al-Anons showed up for her baby shower. And only a smattering of her friends. The power of the program that makes me look good to my family. It's taken me many years to make amends to my children. And I have the gift of Jack going to Reno and seeing my daughter at conventions and being part of her life, who stands up for me and is my advocate to my children, to my adult children. Because it was difficult for my adult children to go through Al-Anon and to go with me. Today I can say with all five of my children, I am in good stead. Only because of the grace of God, people like you in these rooms. So I want to leave you this that I put on the card before I go on and on and on. It says, Dear God, help me to accept the seemingly bad as well as the good which is necessary for my growth. I am so grateful for each one of you in this room, but I am so grateful for the men in this room that continue to carry the message to other men that there is hope and there is recovery and that there is a God in our life tonight. Thank you so much.